This week's parsha is Parshas Vayishlach. We find a famous pasuk in the parsha where Yaakov Avinu, fearful of encountering his brother Esav, and Esav, it seems, is on the warpath. Hashem, he asks, Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esav. Yaakov Avinu turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam in fear and begs him to save him from the hands of his brother, from the hand of Esav. Miyad achi, miyad Esav. And there's obviously a lot of redundancy in the parsha, in that pasuk. It says miyad, and then again miyad, and then it says achi. We already know that Yaakov Avinu's brother is Esav. You could either say miyad achi or miyad Esav. You don't have to say both. And the Beis HaLevi is an absolute must to know. The Beis HaLevi on this pasuk says a tremendous yesod that when dealing with Esav, and not just, of course, the person Esav, but the Ummah of Esav, the nation of Esav, we have to know that Esav really has two forms. Esav is not just one single identity. Esav is able to switch his identity at will. And he actually acts bipolar, if I may use that expression. He has two different types of ways that are the polar opposite within. Sometimes Esav could act like Achi. He's my brother. He's friendly. He's nice. He invites me to his parties. He invites me to his to join him in business, to join his firm, to be his employee. He invites us to his sporting events. He invites us to his entertainment, to his culture. He even will intermarry us if we really want. And then there is, of course, the regular Esav, the default Esav, the Esav that is vicious, the Esav that, when we think of the word Esav, sends shivers down our spine because we know that he's ruthless, we know that he is vile, we know that he is despicable, he's repugnant, that Esav. Esav takes two forms, and if you're a student of history, you know that. There are times throughout our Gullus that Esav is horrible, that Esav acts in manners that are unspeakable, whether it's Tach V'Tat, the Holocaust, the Spanish Inquisition, different periods of time in history that we see the true nature of Esav. His fangs are very clear. He makes no bones about it. He hates us. Halacha he, Esav seina liYaakov. Esav hates Yaakov. It's halacha. It's written in stone. This is the way it is. And he doesn't try to hide it. He's very clear about his true feelings for us. And then, of course, there are the periods of history that we don't see that type of Esav. We don't even know what you're talking about. When you describe Esav, Esav is so nice to us. He's kind to us. He cares about us. He defends us. And everything seems good. And there's a love that exists between us and him. Yaakov Avinu, Baruch HaKadosh, knew full well about this duplicity of Esav. He knew that Esav has these two sides to him, has these two personalities that he could take out and use at will. And so Yaakov Avinu davening to the Ribbono Shel Olam at this critical juncture in history is not just davening to Hashem for that moment in time to save me from the imminent looming threat of Esav marching towards me with 400 soldiers, 400 warriors, and I don't know whether I'm going to die or I'm going to win, but it's scary, and save me from the hands of Esav. Yaakov is already peering far into history, and he's saying, Hatzileni na, Hashem, please save me, miad achi and miad Esav. Save me from the hands of my brotherly Esav, and also from the vicious Esav. Miad achi, sometimes, Hashem, you have to save me from that brother, the loving Esav, the one that embraces me, the one that in this parsha comes and hugs and kisses Yaakov, but really would like to bite Yaakov. But it doesn't seem that way. We're lulled into a false sense of security, feeling that he really does love me. He's a brother to me. We're close, we're tight, we're boys, we're good. I want to be saved from that brother that is lethal, as well as the Miad Esav. I want to be saved from the vicious Esav. Now, if I were to ask you, which is a bigger existential threat to Klal Yisrael? Is it the Achi or is it the Esav? Who's more dangerous? Is it the brother that is loving and is sympathetic and is caring and is with us side by side? Or is it the vicious Esav that we think about when we think of a Nazi, when we think about the Cossacks, when we think about the Spanish during that period of the Inquisition, about the Nazis, about all the mortal enemies, the Romans and the Greeks and the Babylonians? Those are the Esav, the disgusting Esavs. Who is worse, an Esav that's the Achi or the Esav that it's clear the menace, the monster that he is, and the hatred, the seething hatred that he exudes? Which is worse? The Beis Halevi tells us that as well. The Beis Halevi says, well, all you have to do is look at the Seder of the Pasuk. Hatzileni na miad Achi. The first type of Esav that Yaakov davens to protect him from is the Achi, the brotherly Esav. And then Miad Esav, because the brotherly Esav, even though it's sort of contrary to what you would think, the brotherly Esav is far more dangerous a threat to us than the menacing Esav. And the reason for that is simple, because we let our guard down with the other Esav. You see what happens in this country, in America, which is a Medina Shel Chesed. It's the greatest country in the history of the world for the Jews in terms of Gaulus. We've never had a better Gaulus than we do in America. We have the ability, the freedom to practice our religion that we take for granted. We think it's a given. Of course you have shuls. Of course you could daven. Of course you can build kaolim and Beis Yaakovs and get governments to even, you know, kick in money for to pay for your security and to pay for your certain parts of your education. Of course, it's a given. It's not a given. Most, if not kimat, all of the nations that we found ourselves in that hosted us throughout Gaulus were quite against us practicing our religion freely. In Russia, you know, you could be sent to Siberia if you're seen practicing, doing mitzvahs, performing a bris milah, learning. And throughout history, it was like this: the Yavanim and the Romans and we were killed for learning Torah. We were killed for opening up yeshivas and for teaching and for practicing free. So it's not to be taken for granted. This is an amazing country that we're in. But if you look at the numbers, if you look at the sheer statistics, You'll be shocked in knowing that there are many more millions of Jews that perished spiritually, not physically, Baruch Hashem, but spiritually, that there's no trace of them, that they have intermarried to the point that they are no longer Jewish, by the millions, by the tens of millions perhaps, all because of the brotherly embrace, because we feel so at home here. We feel that this is our country, and we're proud, as we should be, but that patriotism sometimes leads to our love of and pride of the culture around us, and we feel as one in terms of going to the sporting events that are of our favorite teams and enjoying the music of our favorite bands and idolizing the celebrities, the movie stars and the politicians and whoever else that we have made to be our idols. And that came at a very, very high cost in terms of the Jewish neshama. Because we feel, okay, you know, like as Rav Moshe Feinstein used to say, the first wave of immigrants that came to these shores, they were meiser nefesh. We read stories about how they would give up their jobs to keep Shabbos, and then the next day, week they would have to find a new job, only to lose it again the next Shabbos, and they told their boss that they have to leave early on these early Fridays. So they, we know, those are heroes that were meiser nefesh for Shabbos, but what happened was, if you're wondering, when did that happen? When did millions of Jews just simply, you know, no longer stay in the fold and become and start intermarrying and becoming, you know, completely obsolete from the Jewish faith and from the Jewish destiny? Ramesha says that their children says, listen, you know, we see that they were meiser nefesh, but they kept saying that it's so hard to be Jewish in this country. It's difficult. It's schwer zu sein a Yid. It's very hard to be Jewish. And so these children grew up and they said, listen, okay, we respect our parents. We know that they grew up in the old shtetloch of Europe and they have to traditionally keep to their parents' faith. But we want to, you know, live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. We don't want a difficult life. We don't want to be meiser nefesh to keep Shabbos. We want to live a good life. We want to drink Coca-Cola, and we want to go into, you know, have drive-in movies, and we want to be able to roller skate, and we want to be able to go to dances and to go to proms and to do everything that our teenage American citizens are doing. We don't want to be different from them. We don't want a difficult life. We want an easy geschmack of life. And so one after another, they started peeling off. That was the hand of Achiv, because it's so free. Society in America is so wonderful and so free, and it is. And that gave us great gifts and great privileges. Look at us. We built, after the Holocaust, a network of yeshivas and kailim, Beis Yaakovs, and day schools throughout the entire fruited plain of America, from north to south, east to west, that it's unbelievable what's going on in terms of the growth, all because we have these liberties, Baruch Hashem. And we were able to prosper, and we were able to grow our children in a derech of Yisrael Saba. But there's a cost to that. Many more children were lost spiritually in America than were lost in the Holocaust. Many more. Many more. 6 million Jews were lost in the Holocaust. Tens of millions of Jews were lost in America. Dr. Lander, Olav Shalom, who is the balabayas of this yeshiva and this Makom Torah, used to famously say, and he would say it all the time, I heard him say it all the time, that college campuses in America are the crematorium of American youth, of American Jewish youth. That's what he said. It's a very strong statement to make. What does that mean? And the answer is that, and I know I have friends that went to very, you know, large colleges, Ivy League colleges, or a very big guy, and they would tell me that there is, I don't know, tens of thousands of college students in certain campuses. I think one friend in particular, I think, was talking about Cornell in upstate New York, in Ithaca, I think it is. And there is I think it's the largest Jewish population, at least at the time, of all colleges in the country. It had the largest, but he says you could walk around there and you won't find a single yarmulke. He says him and another guy were like the only two people at the time on the campus, the entire campus, maybe 12,000 Jewish students that wore yarmulkes openly. And he said it didn't start that way. Meaning a lot of kids came to college, I'm sure you have friends that maybe experienced the same thing, and they started off in these co-ed colleges, these Ivy League colleges, these regular geisha colleges, and they had all the best intentions. And they started off and they went to the Hillel House, and they made minyanim, and they had shiurim, and they did daf yomi, whatever they might have started out doing, with all the best of intentions, and within a few weeks or months, they were not anymore attending minyanim, they were not anymore learning. they were not wearing even their yarmulkes, many of them. And before you knew it, they're dating, you know, the Catholics and the and whoever it is on campus. And that was it. That's the end of them. This happens every day as we're speaking on college campus. That's why Dr. Lander started Touro College, to try to fight, and quite successfully he did so. You know, this lure of American Jewish youth to these campuses, which is a place that millions and millions of neshamas were lost and continue to be lost. So there's the Yad Achi, the Yad Esav, and the Beis Levi says the first threat, the primary threat to a Yid is the Yad Achi. It's the brotherly Esav. It's the brotherly, embrace me, intermarry with me, eat with me, dance with me. That's the Esav. That's the most dangerous for a Yid, because a Yid naturally wants to acclimate himself to the surroundings. We don't want to always feel threatened. We want to feel, and when we came to these shores, it was like such a chiddush. In Europe, in Russia, in Poland, in Ukraine, the Goyim were always shooting at Jews, always attacking, always threatening. And to come to these shores and feel like some menuchas ha-nefesh finally, it was insatiable. A Jew became like attracted to these shores and these people in a way that really allowed us to feel so comfortable that we let our guard down and we lost too many neshamas here. Miyad Achi, Miyad Esav. This week I had a chiddush based on the Beis Halevi regarding last week's parsha. Last week's parsha was when Esav was sort of duped by Yaakov. Yaakov, in a very difficult parsha to understand, steals the brachas from Esav that Yitzchak really wanted to give Esav, and Rivka helped Yaakov get the brachas away from him. And we know what happened. He took Esav's coat and he put he made fur on his hands. And he came before Yitzchak Avinu, and Yitzchak Avinu, asks, "Who are you?" He says, "Anoichi Esav b'chayrecha, I am Esav, your son," etc. And then he feels him; he feels his hands are hairy, but it's a little confusing because Yaakov is using the language that he always uses. He says, "Yakum na'avi, please Tati, stand up." Esav never really spoke like that. Esav always used a very gruff language. He would say, Yakum avi, kum avi, get up. He didn't say no. He didn't use the Lashon please. He didn't use the Lashon, as Rashi puts it, Lashon tachanunim, a nice, sweet, beseeching, friendly, inviting type of Lashon. He always was very tough and gruff. So Yitzchak is a little confused, it seems. He says, Hakol kol Yaakov, the voice is the voice of Yaakov. He's speaking like Yaakov. Vayadayim yidei Esav, but the hands are the hands of Esav. Feels like Esav. So what would you do? What would you do if you were Yitzchak? It seems like a little bit, like, it's complicated now. It's not so simple. I want to give the brachas to Esav, but his voice sounds a lot like Yaakov, even though his hands seem like Esav. Okay, let's give him the bracha. Shouldn't you investigate the matter a little bit? It's a stira, right? Like, do your research. Do some due diligence. If there seems to be a stira, because HaKol Kol Yaakov, and yet the Adayim is Yidei Esav, and you want to give it to Esav, so you have to look into it. Why is he not speaking like Esav? No, I'm going to give him the brachas. Good question, right? Like, what happened? And there's a lot of Mefarshim that try to explain it. There's a Ramban, there's even a Beis Halevi that says a very good chap, beautiful chap. But I was thinking to say, based on this Beis Halevi, the following. Yaakov Avinu was saying like this, HaKol Kol Yaakov. Yes, the voice sounds a lot like Yaakov. He's speaking so sweetly to me. He sounds like Yaakov. V'hayadayim yidei Esav. The hands are the hands of Esav. Meaning, there's two different types of hands. We said in this week's parasha, Hatzileni na miyad achi, Miyad Esav. Esav has two hands. Sometimes Esav shows his hand as the brotherly, the nice, the sweet Esav. Sometimes he shows himself as being gruff and disgusting and vulgar. but he could go both ways. He has this duplicity. He has this way of sort of changing his mannerisms, his personality, whenever he wants to. He can act sweet, or he can act really not sweet. Hakol kol Yaakov. It sounds like Yaakov. It sounds like the Lashon Tachlunim of Yaakov. And Yadayim Yaday Esav. And I know that Esav has two hands. He goes both ways. He could be really not nice. He could say, Kum Na'avi, but whenever he wants, he could also use the Lashon that will charm you, will dazzle you, will make you feel like you could just like trust him and be vulnerable to him. So he gave him the brachas, because that's Esav. Esav, he understood that he could speak like Yaakov also. And he does speak like Yaakov. A lot of times he speaks like Yaakov very clearly. He speaks the language that Yaakov likes to hear. He's very nice, very sweet. And we love that form of Esav, because it lets us feel at home. It lets us feel comfortable. And we think that everything is so wonderful. But we have to remember very clearly that Esav is still Esav. And we don't like thinking that, and it's very politically incorrect at times to even speak about this, because like, what are you saying? Are you saying that we should be mistrustful to every single non-Jewish person? That means we shouldn't trust anyone. We can't allow ourselves to ever trust our neighbors, trust the people, the people around us. We can't. I don't know exactly what to tell you about that. But I can tell you that if we are going to see this Beis HaLevi for what it is, there is no better time in the last 80 years than right now, in this moment in history that we find ourselves in. For the last 70, 80 years, at least in America, we have been treated with kid gloves. We've had a fantastic, phenomenal vacation from Gullus. It's been amazing. It's been an amazing ride. That's not to say that we didn't have incidents here and there throughout the history of America. Of course we did. And we had, you know, there are people that have been attacked over throughout the time. And there was anti-Semitism here and there in pockets. But the vast majority, by and large, of this experience in America has been absolutely a honeymoon for Klal Yisrael. And we took full advantage, and we were able to build and to prosper on these shores, and it's been amazing. It's been amazing. But right now, we have to step back a little bit, or a lot, and be able to see and to identify that even here in America, even in these shores, even these what we consider to be safe harbors, there is so much vicious anti-Semitism all around us. You can't be blinded by it anymore. We have to see it for what it is. This is not to scare anybody. We're not looking to incite any fear or nervousness, chas v'shalom. We want to be able to stay who we are, stay calm, cool, and collected, but to understand and to see the unmasking of Esav, of the brotherly Esav, and see it for what it is. Not to say that there aren't tzaddikei umas ha'olam. There are many people that are nice and normal, and there are people that are really good to us and have been good to us consistently, whether it's politicians or regular neighbors or friends or people that we, you know, professors. There are people and gayim that are very fine and very nice and good. But we see now so clearly how the world really doesn't like us. The world does not like us at all. On college campuses, unbelievable what's going on. The hatred that's boiling over, that's simmering on every college campus practically in America. I've seen videos, as I'm sure you have, of people in Cooper Union. There's a Jewish group in Cooper Union, and they had to like lock themselves in the Cooper Union library, because there were literally the protesters, the pro-Palestinian protesters. I don't think they were all Arabs. I don't know if any of them were Arabs. They were just liberal college students that have this craze right now that Hamas is wonderful and they represent all of the oppressed people in the world, and therefore we can lash out at the Jews anywhere in the world, and we will, and if we could take them down, we'll by extension be taking down the Zionist entity in Israel, and this will somehow settle scores. and they were banging on the doors, and these Jews, can you imagine being in a library? Imagine yourself being downstairs in our library, and there is on the window, there are hundreds and more people banging on the windows, screaming epithets about Jews and about, you know, and about Palestine, and they're this close to getting in. They're this close to breaking the window. Can you imagine the pachad that you have to go through? And this is taking place in every college, even the most Ivy League of colleges, Harvard University, which is like, you know, it's every American Jewish mother's dream to get their son into Harvard. That's the dream. That's the American dream. Your son goes to Harvard, you could brag for the rest of your life, your son went to Harvard, your son is in Yale, your son is in Princeton, your son is in Columbia, NYU. These are the worst places for some reason. I don't know why, but it seems like the smarter they are, the more vicious they are. And this is what we're up against. And it's so clear right now, the Achi that we were so infatuated with and that we gave millions of neshamas to on the Mizbeach of this Achi, we see now it was never our brother. They didn't really love us. They hated us. They still will hate us. And not all, but many, many that we don't even realize really hate us, hate us. And it's clear today, for some reason, because of what's going on in Gaza, even though that should have generated sympathy on behalf of the world. You see what happened? 1,300 people were murdered and raped. These are liberal women's groups that are so, you know, pro-feminist, pro-women, you know, anti-rape, anti-abuse, anti... And not a single person comes to the Israelis' defense and says, wait a minute, these Hamas, they raped women, Befarhesia. How you talking? No, that's okay. Now it's okay because the Jew. Babies were murdered. Babies were taken hostage. It's okay. It's justified. Where's the rationale? The answer is that there's no rationale. Halacha hi Esav Sina Es Yaakov. Esav despises Yaakov. And we don't like to think that way. We're not programmed in America to think that way. I have friends that live in Belgium, in Antwerp. They're programmed from birth to feel this way because they see it. They always are in the crosshairs of the Goyim. Politicians will campaign on the platform they want to rid Antwerp of Jews openly. Every Jew in Antwerp has a safe in their house with diamonds and with cash. They're always ready to leave B'chipazim because they know that this could flip in a second. We in America, we feel very comfortable. It's our land. We could wear our yarmulkes in public. In Europe, you think they wear their yarmulkes, you know, on a regular street, maybe in the diamond district or whatever, where there are a lot of Jews. But like, think they go and dress with a yarmulke and with tzitzis hat or whatever. They don't. They'd be crazy to. In Germany, in France, in England, you can't do that in most of the streets. You'll get killed. We feel that we can. Baruch Hashem, we've been and we have, but. But now we don't feel that confident anymore, and we shouldn't, because we see that everything is changing. There's violence in the streets. There's protests on the Brooklyn Bridge and on London Bridge and in Russian airports. I don't know if anyone's seen that video a couple of weeks ago, but in an airport in Russia, they found that there was an airplane that landed on the tarmac from Israel. It was a nondescript flight. It wasn't an El Al flight. It was just a regular chartered plane, but they heard that there was Jews. And there were Arabs in this region of Russia that came into the airport, and they were screaming Allahu Akbar, and they were looking for any Jew that they could find. Baruch Hashem, they didn't get any, but they would have slaughtered as many Jews as they could. And we think, okay, but that's in Russia. In America, that can't happen. Really? It can happen in America as it could happen in Russia. We don't want to think that. We don't want to believe it. But we see that this is, unfortunately, where we're holding right now in Gullahs. The newspapers, the New York Times. I mean, when I was growing up as a kid, the New York Times was mamish, the Bible of every Jewish family. This is like, you trusted the New York Times. It was the old gray lady, and it was all the news that was fit to print. And this was like every Jewish house had the New York Times delivered. Today, you can't bring the New York Times into your house because it's owned by Jews, but they're so anti-Israel, so anti-Jew, anti-from. Besides for the politics and what's going on in Israel, just locally in New York, with the Hasidim, anti-Hasidim, anti-Yeshiva system, they make these long stories, long articles about how bad the Jewish educational system is. And many other newspapers around the country and many media stations. We're living in very difficult times, but in a way, there's an expression in opportunity. In chaos is opportunity. When there's chaos, and there is chaos right now in the world, there's crazy chaos in the world. And it's not getting better. Right now it's getting worse, and the war is starting up again. There's going to be thousands of more Gazans killed, and the protests will be louder, and we don't know where it's going to end. In this chaos, there's opportunity. What opportunity is there? There's the opportunity for us to realize that a Yid and a Guy are two different things. We are Yaakov and they are Esav. The lines are no longer blurred. They're making it very clear that there's a line of demarcation that's 100 miles long and wide that splits us and them. And we have to understand that this is the reality of the Gullus. We had a vacation, but now the vacation might be over a little bit. And we have to understand that we are Yidden. We are Klal Yisrael. We are the Amah Nivchar. And as such, we have to regroup and recognize to come back to our roots, to come back to what makes us a Yid, and not to and to sort of shatter the illusion that we're just like them. I'm not saying that, we can't root for our baseball teams or our football teams or whatever, but be careful doing it. If you're going to do it, just be careful, because you're not them. You're not the same. We're different. I remember I once went to a baseball game when I was a bacher. A friend of mine got tickets. He asked me if I wanted to come. It happened to be, they say, I'm not a big baseball fan. I just, I went maybe to 5 games my whole life, 10 games maybe. But it was a Mets game. It was in Shea Stadium, which is a stadium before Citi Field. And they say that it might have been the best baseball game in the history of baseball. It was, I don't remember who they were playing against. But it was like a pennant game. It was deciding whether they got into the World Series or not. It was during the 90s. I gave a shiur recently and I was talking about it, and someone was a big baseball fan. He thought it was the St. Louis Cardinals. I don't know if it was or not, but you could look it up. I think it was during the 90s. It was a phenomenal game getting into. And the Shea Stadium was rocking. Literally rocking. It was shaking from all the people were going crazy. Every pitch was like an explosion. If it was a strike, if it was a ball, if it was a hit, if it was a this. And it was like, it was like they were, the Mets won, I think, in the end. But the place was like, they were fighting for every pitch and every strike, and it was like the electricity in the stadium was Ein L'Shayer. It was like beyond. And like, I was standing next to like this big schlub of like a guy, like an Italian, guy. And he was eating hot dogs the whole time, drinking beer, and he was meshuggah. And I was finding myself bonding with a guy. Like, we have no shaykhas to him. I'm a yeshiva bacher. He's an Italian. We have no, literally Yaakov sitting next to Esav. But this game was like so electric that we were I don't know if we were high-fiving or whatever, but like there was points that he was like about to hug me. And Baruch Hashem, I resisted. But why am I telling you this? Because it's so easy to be lulled into this false sense of like, we're one. We love the same teams. We love the same bands. We love the same food. We love the same. There's nothing. There's no lines that we're free. We escape the curse of the Jewish Gullus. This is Olam Haba. This is like, people used to think that President Roosevelt was Melech HaMashiach. I'm not exaggerating. They thought that this was like the promised land, and Roosevelt was Mashiach, until they found out that Roosevelt was the worst anti-Semite, and he could have bombed the tracks in Auschwitz, and he could have helped the Jews in many different ways, and he chose not to. At the end, he did a few good things, but it was basically, you know, they thought that Roosevelt was who knows what, and he was a Rasha Marusha. But Jews of old, they felt that, you know, this is our land, this is our country, and maybe we do. But now we have this opportunity amidst the chaos. We could see that a little clarity, glimpses of clarity, that it's not as simple as we thought it was. It's not as seamless a relationship. And at the end, a guy considers us Jews, whether or not we're from or not from. If we're Jewish, if we have a Jewish name, if we have a, you know, then we're Jews, just like Hitler considered all of us Jews. We're Jews regardless. And so in Eretz Yisrael, by the way, what's going on in Eretz Yisrael, the level of achdus that is taking place right now is unbelievable. People that have been there have told me that, like, as much as you see clips in here and there about of Hasidim and Chilonim dancing and Streimloch and no yarmulkes and tattoos and every, you have no idea what's going on there. The level of love and achdus and ava is off the charts. Off the charts. Unbelievable what's going on there. Because of the danger, because they saw Esav's ugly, vicious face on October 7th. And Yishmael and Esav sort of, they intermarried a couple of parashiyos ago, and they're the same. They're the same. And they saw it clearly, and we have to see it clearly also. We have to understand that we have to have achdus amongst ourselves. We have to love each other, whether it's a chassid, whether it's a not-from person, you know, whether it's a person with a black yarmulke or a kippah seruga or a leather yarmulke or whatever, or baseball cap. We're Yidden, we're Klal Yisrael. We have to love each other because we are all we have. And this is the opportunity that we have at the moment, that we could really like retreat a little bit from our Gayesha culture. If we love music and we love their video games, we love their movies, we love their pop culture, we love their, you know, their politics, we love their, we have to, whoa, khalas, enough. Stop. You know, this is not, this, it's not us. We're Yidden. We have a Messiah. We have Halacha. We have Minhagim. And we have to be careful. What a guy's Minhagim are not our Minhagim. I'll end with a var from Revolbi, which I say a lot, but he has an amazing var. Every morning we make a Birchas HaShachar of Shalaya Sani Gai. Hashem, you have not made us a guy. Thank you. But Revolbi says, you know, it is a bracha, but it's also a question. It's an open, hanging question. Shalaya Sani Gai, when you make that bracha in the morning, you have to also ask yourself, you know, if we're even awake enough to think about what we're saying, but we have to ask ourselves, is it true? Am I not really like a closet guy? Is there not a guy inside of me hiding, lurking in the recesses of my heart? There's no guy in me? Let me ask you a question, and I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you, and you'll be honest with yourself. Does Sunday feel like Wednesday? Does Thanksgiving feel like a regular school day? Does Kratzmach feel like a day? Like, does Martin Luther King Day feel like a... No. The answer is no. Not just because the banks are closed, because there's a ruach in the air that it's different. Sunday, even if I come to First Seder, but it's like almost like it's purely lishma. Like, I don't really need to be here because it's Sunday. Sunday, it's a yom de pagra, it's a holiday. I don't need to be here. It's a joke. Most guys are not, you know, like, what I need to be here. It's a Sunday. It's Thanksgiving. It's Kratzmach. It's vacation time. It's Labor Day weekend. What do you mean Labor Day weekend? Are you a Yid or are you a guy? I'm talking to myself, by the way. I feel this as much, if not more, than anybody else. It's a reality. Because we grew up in this country, because we, in Eretz Yisrael, there's no Sunday. Sunday is a regular work day. But because we grew up here, Sunday is a Gayesh Shabbos. That's what it is. It's not a Yiddish Shabbos. There's no excuse that we shouldn't be working and we shouldn't be learning. We shouldn't be doing a regular day's Avaida. Sunday is not a... I don't know if the Ebershter gives us off on Sunday. Gives us off on Shabbos. Sunday doesn't give us off. Sunday, it's back to the grind. Whatever the grind is. If you're working, you're working. If you're learning, you're learning. It's a regular day. But the reason why we feel it's because we have a shtickle guy in us. Because we have a little bit of a guy in us. Why do we have to have all the... you know, the Chinese food and the Thai food and the American food and the hot dogs and the hamburgers, and I love it, and pizza, I love it more than any of them, of you. But it's because we have to follow the Goyim. The Goyim are eating pizza, we have to eat pizza. Goyim are eating hot dogs, we have to eat hot dogs. There's a medrash, by the way, if you think this is crazy, there's a medrash that says, you know, that the reason why the Yidden left Egypt, we know three reasons, Shleishina Shemam, we didn't change our Jewish names, we didn't change our Jewish way of dressing, which is another discussion, and we didn't change our language. We spoke Lashon HaKodesh. But there's another medrash that very few people know about, Shleishina Es Ma'achalam. Klal Yisrael never changed the type of foods they ate. I don't know what foods they ate then, but you know they ate matzah ball soup, they ate cholent, they ate pastrami sandwiches, I don't know, whatever it is that Yidden have eaten, that's what the Yidden in Mitzrayim continue to eat. Lachmajin, right? I have to like be a shawarma, but you know that's what a Yid eats a Yiddish food. No, we eat everything. Why do we eat everything? Because we want to be like Goyim. My point is that unfortunately, B'avnei Seinu HaRabim, because of the Gullus, we have been so desensitized to the differences between who we really are and the Goyim. We think it's okay. We're fine. Chassidim, maybe they have to dress like that how many of our grandparents dress like that? Probably most of our grandparents dress like that in Europe. Okay, so we came to America. I'm not saying that. I'm not proposing we all go back to dressing. But there's a point here that we have been lulled into the sense of security and the sense of peace and that we're okay, we're good. We could dress like I am. We could eat like I am. We could sing like I am. We could act like I am. We could, and it's fine. But now we see that it's not fine. Now we see that we have to regroup and we have to realize we're Klal Yisrael. We're the Am HaNivchar. We're different. Whether we like it or not, we don't like always being, you know, hated, but we're hated. And if we're hated, you know what happens when people are hated? They find the people in their inner circle that are also hated and they love those people. They coalesce with those people because you have no one else. So when you think you have everybody else, so you could afford to be very, you know, snooty and you know, I don't like this type of Jew, I don't like that type of Jew. In Eretz Yisrael, that's how it was. It was terrible in Eretz Yisrael. We know that. Chiloni and Charedi today. No. We're all one. I'll end with a quick vart. Yaakov Avinu puts, a couple of weeks ago, stones, 12 stones around his head. And we know what happened to those stones. They all become one. And that's, of course, symbolic of the fact that Klal Yisrael is Mis'achid, the 12 tribes come together as one. Why did he put those stones around his head? Rashi says, because he was Yarab Ibn Achayas, he was afraid. He was afraid that animals might attack him if he sleeps there at night, so he put like almost like a wall around him. And that's when Klal Yisrael was Mis'achid, because unfortunately, we become one when we have an external threat. When we're threatened by Goyim around us, whether it's Bnei Yishmael or whether it's Esav or both, we feel a certain sense of achdus. And that's what we have to do nowadays. We have to feel achdus with our brothers. We have to love our brothers. We have to be able to love Hashem better, come back to who we are, recognize that we're not Goyim and that we're Klal Yisrael. We have to be misyachid ourselves through davening, through learning, through our hanhagas, through our dress, through our actions, through our the way that we breathe, the way that we sleep, the way that we eat. Everything has to be Yiddish, has to be Klal Yisraeldik. And amidst Hashem, all of these events are, I think, the Chevle Mashiach, it's pretty clear. The Mashiach is on his way, and amidst Hashem will be Zeicha to the Gula Shleima, b'meher b'yameinu, amin v'amin.